Welcome to The Bridge, your ERG podcast. Our mission is to connect people, purpose, and progress through topics that are relevant to every teammate. And now, this month's host, Catalyst.
Welcome back to The Bridge. I am Kelsey White, and I'm here with Jeannie Fetro, and we are so excited to be here on behalf of Team Catalyst. Jeannie, maybe for the sake of our listeners, we should introduce ourselves.
Absolutely. I'm Jeannie Fetro. I am a real estate and chattel appraiser in the Sheldon office. My territory covers Northwest Iowa. I have been with the associations 21 years, 10 years of that time on the lending team and 11 years on the appraisal team. I live in Milford, Iowa, which is near the Iowa Great Lakes or Okoboji, that some of you may have visited from time to time. And I live there with my husband and our son, Eli, and we also have four older children. So there's a little bit about me personally and professionally. Kelsey, how about you?
I am Kelsey White. I am a peer team expert for our customer experience specialist. The peer team expert role was a new role that was developed during Thrive rollout. And essentially what I do is I help train and roll out new processes to our teammates. I work right now with five different offices, but really as PTEs work together as a holistic group, just to make sure that everyone's on the same page and consistent and doing processes the same. So training new employees, but also bringing out the best in our existing employees also. So I'm excited to do that. Personally, I live in Estherville, Iowa, which is northwest, not too far from Jeannie. We're actually pretty close to each other. I work essentially out of the Emmitsburg office, and I have two kids. I have a son who's going to be a senior this year, so I'm having a little bit of stress and anxiety about that, and then a daughter who's going to be a freshman. So I actually have two high schoolers. It's pretty amazing to me that they are getting older, but I am continuing to stay the same age. So.
I know. Hallelujah.
For those of you listening in for maybe the first time, Catalyst is one of our ERGs here at Farm Credit Services of America. Our mission is to foster opportunities that empower women and enrich their professional development. Today's podcast is really going to focus in on our mission, and we are so excited to have a special guest here to help us talk about this topic. Welcome to Fallon.
Hi, Kelsey. Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
We're doing good. Great.
Good. Awesome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yes, we really appreciate you joining us. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role with Farm Credit?
Yes, absolutely. So first and foremost, I'm a wife and a mom. My husband and I will be married 20 years this New Year's Eve. He works for a company here in town called Tenasca. His name's Chris. We've lived now in Omaha, like I said, a little over 20 years. We have one son. He is 15. He will be a sophomore here at a school called Elkhorn South. And we have one dog, a French bulldog named Chips. And so we really enjoy boating, hiking, golfing kind of poorly, but really just hanging out as a family, traveling, doing a lot of fun stuff. So that's what I do in my personal time. Professionally, I've been with the organizations now a little over 11 years. So I started in our capital markets team as an analyst and then working on the sales side and syndications. Then I became full-time syndications, selling the loans that our ABF team was originating. And through that process, we do like what we do all the time, which is re-swizzled. And restructured. And I had an opportunity to take a leadership job. And so I was approached to take, at the time, what was called our ABF operations role. I had to be talked into that a little bit. But once I did, it was a really amazing opportunity to get to learn about leadership. I get to learn a little bit more about our organization, how we do things. And then we restructured again. And so I got a senior leader position leading the underwriting of our protein division and our agribusiness capital team. Did that for 5 or 6 years. And then with Position to Serve, we had an opportunity to really enhance what we were doing on the corporate and commercial side. And so I got my corporate and operations leadership role, which I did for 2 years. And then with our collaboration, I've just recently been named as the corporate credit leader. So a lot of history in sales, credit, operations, but also just a lot of opportunity. Just as the organization has grown, has shifted, has looked at things differently, it's provided me an opportunity to get to do different things and just to have a lot of fun doing it.
One thing that we have noticed as Jeannie and I have talked about being members of Catalyst in this amazing group is there's some just some common themes, and there's some topics that a lot of women like to talk about, and they run across these topics. And so when we had this opportunity to do this podcast, we were really excited to have Fallon join us because she has been a great voice to listen to, and I know inspirational to a lot of people, been a mentor, and just as a senior leader here at the company, you know, really brought some great inspiration to our teammates. And so one of the things that I really want to talk about, because we hear it over and over and over, is work-life balance. You know, there's different topics about work-life balance. In fact, when it was brought up, I talked and I started listening to some different podcasts. What are some tips and tricks on this work-life balance? And some of the things that we talked about or that I've listened to is, well, you know, maybe work-life balance, there isn't some magic potion. There isn't some great, great words of wisdom that we all need to follow by, that maybe it's inside of us and that we need to focus and really take ownership in it. So, Fallon, how do you work on your work-life balance being an executive here?
So first off, that is so humbling to hear you say those things about me, Kelsey. Thank you. That was just so kind. So first off, you're exactly right. Work-life balance it's difficult, but it's also very personal. I think we can all sit back and look at, you know, what Jeannie's doing or what you're doing or what others are doing and say, well, they should never do that. That's why they're stressed out. Or this is why, you know, I'm stressed out or whatever that looks like. But we all have our own, what I would say, responsibility and accountability to understand what that work-life balance means. And I have failed at it consistently, but I would say there about over a year and a half ago, I had a situation where I came home and I was stretched really thin. I had overcommitted myself personally to some volunteer projects and volunteer efforts. I had overcommitted myself to some things at work. And I had a day where I dropped the ball on something at work. I didn't show up well to a meeting. I wasn't prepared. I hadn't put forth the effort. I showed up that night to a church finance meeting and I had absolutely dropped the ball on renewing a CD that had come due and just basically absolutely felt like I was failing left and right. And I was really upset and I came home and my husband, you know, just said something really eloquently. He said, you do this to yourself. And I got mad, of course, and I said, no, these people need me. They need my help and I need to be part of this. And he just looked at me and he says, no, you don't. And so that night, it really sparked in me this thought process. And so I got out a piece of paper and I've had other people do the same exercise. And I would encourage both of you to do this as well. I spent 4, 5, or 6 nights physically writing down things that I want to start, but more importantly, things that I want to stop. And what it forced me to do was start to think about, where am I really spending my time? Where am I spending my time from the minute I get up to the time I go to bed? And what am I doing? And there were some things or activities or things that I was a part of that I found out not only were they draining me, I didn't like doing them, but I just felt like I had to do them for whatever reason. And so once I saw on paper kind of some of these things that I wanted to stop doing, I started to develop a plan then on how I was going to either exit it, shed it, delegate it, move it, or just quietly say, you know what, this doesn't serve me the same way that it needs to serve me. And it was really powerful because what it allowed me to do was start to do some things that I was really excited and passionate about and start to spend more time with people that I really cared about. And so if I could leave any word of advice to folks, is spend a good 4 or 5 or 6 days physically writing out, what do you want to start? What do you want to stop? But really start to fulfill that and see that out. Because I will guarantee you, you will start to see more balance once you start and stop activities that don't fulfill you.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, Fallon. So recently we had read Closing the Confidence Gap by Kelly Thompson.
Yeah.
And in that book, she has an exercise. If none of you've read it, I highly recommend it. She has an exercise where you prioritize or write down your top 5 values.
Yes.
And then you look at the things in your life that you are participating in or that are maybe draining your energy. And if they don't align with your values, maybe it's time to cut ties.
Yes.
So very, very similar exercise, very intentional, but leads to better time management, feeling more fulfilled, less stress, et cetera.
I love that. My top 2 values are family and friends. And what I was finding is that I was definitely feeling like I was failing those top 2 because I was focusing all my energy on these other things that were not fulfilling me. And so I love that exercise. It's the same concept, same thing. One other item that we talked about as a family that we're going to start was just simple meal planning, right? At the beginning of the week. And then we started who's accountable or who's going to help out with that. Because I always felt like I had to be the one that did that. Or I was the one that led that effort at home. And after my husband and I talked about it, I was like, no, like we're all in charge of this. We can all figure this out. But if we do it up front, it causes less stress during the week. So there's little things we can start and stop. But I love that concept of combining your values with it. Because it really helps figure out where you really want to spend your time.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think sometimes we think about work-life balance and we think about, delegating. And you can delegate at home too. So I love that you're like, this meal planning can be all of us, you know? They always say you're supposed to set boundaries, you're supposed to prioritize tasks, and you're supposed to delegate. So those are 3 things that you can do personally and professionally that might just help move things along a little easier for you.
I think when you see it on paper, it really becomes eye-opening. Because I think a lot of times you click off a list in your head of things that you need to get done or that you have done or you need to do. But when you physically see where you spend your time, it's really eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And being able to forego the situation where you are dropping balls and you're failing.
Or yeah.
I honestly myself have went through this period over probably the last 4 to 6 months, and I recognize it's short term, but I also have to learn to prioritize, and it's okay to say no. It's okay to delegate. It's okay to let some things slide as long as you're prioritizing those things that affect others or maybe affect customer relationships. So
I love that you said that too. Another one that I learned is, and this is hard for me, but you have to be vulnerable and ask for help. I think a lot of times we feel like we need to be superwomen and do it all ourselves and own it all ourselves. But there's times where we need to stop and say, wait a second, I just need help. And that's at work, that's at home. It's little things. I was struggling one day. I had committed to picking up my son after school, but then something popped up at work. And again, because family is so important to me and I had committed to my son that I was going to pick him up, I was just crushed that I wasn't going to be able to do this. And I'm scrambling to figure out what to do. And my husband couldn't do it. And so he said, text Leanne. Well, Leanne is Tony Justina's wife and she lives 2 blocks from us. And she had always said, if you ever need help picking up your son, Brock, let me know. And I was like, I can't do that. She's got, you know, and he's like, just text her. So what happened? I texted her and she's like, I would love to do that. Of course I can pick him up for you. And then what happened is I was able to help her out a couple of weeks later. And so we just have to be vulnerable sometimes and actually ask for help, because it's amazing how many others around us are willing to do that and how then you can pitch in later to help them.
What I love about this conversation that we're having is when we do this ourselves, what's amazing is the people around you will see what you're doing as well. And you may be empowering others and you don't even realize it. So when I have an event that I need to go to for my kids, like you said, one of my top priorities is value is to go to my kids' stuff. I am I grew up in a household that my parents never went to anything. And I remember that. And so it's very important to me that I make it to their games. And so I kind of just make that a priority in my life. And then in the end, I've had other coworkers say around me, you know, it's really awesome that you can make it to all this stuff and be so involved. And it's inspired me to do other things with my kids too. And so it's interesting how when you focus on yourself, you empower yourself, which then in turn empowers others, which kind of leads to our next topic. So we were just discussing like, what does that exactly mean to you to empower yourself?
A lot of it is what we just talked about, that it's okay to say no. A lot of times, you know, we feel like we need to show up or be up at every single thing or every little situation, or we need to be involved in everything. And there's times where it's okay to say no. And in fact, it's empowering to say no. The other thing that I feel empowered in is helping others. So while it's hard for me to ask for help, I absolutely love spending the time pouring, you know, the energy and the encouragement and, you know, the overall just helping other women and other people see their full potential. And so when I do that, I get such a lift from it that I think it just is a self-fulfilling prophecy through that.
And I think that magnifies when you empower someone else, they're feeling more confident, more positive. And that projects onto the others that are immediately around them, their relationships, whether it's teammates or at home. And then also, I think both of these topics kind of go together in that if we're happier at work or if we're thriving at work, we're typically better at home and vice versa. If we're thriving at home, and obviously everything's not always going to be perfect, but these are steps that we can take to improve the situations at home or in the office.
Absolutely. I think we tell ourselves a lot of stories. I know I do. I know that sometimes I can get in my head and tell myself a story, but I know it happens all the time at work. So Kelsey, your exact example of, you know, taking the time and being really committed to saying, you know what, I'm going to attend that soccer game or that lacrosse game or that Girl Scout event or whatever it may be. Others sometimes tell themselves a story of, I could never do that. You know, no one's going to let me do that. Or I shouldn't do that. But a lot of times it's challenging ourselves and saying, why can't I, you know, if I come in early or I log in later, once everyone's in bed or, you know, why can't I go do that? And so not only is it challenging ourselves internally, but it's also encouraging others of, hey, are you going to go attend XYZ? And when they say, oh, I can't do that, it's challenging them and saying, well, why not? I'll help you out, or I can help do that. Or, hey, we can just tackle that in the morning. That's a lot of what I try and focus on too in my leadership, is challenging others around me and the stories they're telling. Because sometimes that's what's keeping a lot of people from their full potential. It's that story they tell themselves about that situation.
Yeah. I love that. I love that, you know, we are teammates. It's one of our core principles. And one of the things that I love about this organization is, you know, I might go do this and someone's going to help me out. And then in turn, they might go take care of their elderly parent, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be about having kids at home. It could be anything, something that we care as teammates. And so we want to make sure that we, pay it forward, however that might work out. But I do love that about this organization and just the culture we have here. So can you tell me a little bit about what you call your board of directors?
Absolutely. So this is a concept. So when I first took my senior leadership position, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, the organization invested a personal coach for me. And at first I was negative on having a coach. I thought that was, you know, something they only assigned, you know, people that were on life support here, you know, in an absolute dumpster fire. And Mark Jensen, of all people, was like, Fallon, you know, I've had a personal coach for several years, and coaches are some of the best thing that you can do, right, for your professional and personal development. So the coach I got was absolutely phenomenal from a standpoint of, she talked a lot about finding people around you to challenge you, to help you think differently, and also to not only help validate sometimes your thoughts, but also to tell you when you're wrong. And so she introduced this concept to me of a board of directors. And these are people that you go to, isn't necessarily always on a routine or consistent basis, but these are a group of people that are trusted to you, that you know that are going to tell you the truth. They're going to give you feedback. They're going to shoot you straight. They're going to challenge you. But they're also going to know sometimes the difference of when you need a kick in the pants, but also when you maybe need a hug. And so I, over time, have built myself up a group of a board of directors. It varies between 3 to 4 people at a time. These are folks that I go to fairly consistently just to say, hey, how do you think that went? Or, man, I'm really struggling with X, Y, Z. How would you handle this? Or can you tell me like what you're hearing about this? And it's been amazing for me because I've gotten really good feedback and I've been able to act on that feedback. But the key to that is surrounding yourself with people who are going to be direct, who they're going to be straight with you. And they're going to tell you kind of maybe when you didn't show up the best.
So, vulnerable question, and maybe putting you a little bit on the spot here, Fallon, is there a specific situation or experience that comes to mind that you went to a member of your board of directors and they gave you feedback that maybe you weren't ready to hear yet? And how did you take that feedback, and how did, tell us about that process?
Yeah. So I had a meeting where it was probably going a little bit sideways of where I thought the direction should go. So I generally tend to be fairly direct. I tend to get to an answer fairly quickly. And I can get a little bit impatient when others aren't coming along as fast as I think they should to the answer. And so I've been known to maybe roll over a few folks, right? And just keep firing away and keep moving forward. And I was just frustrated at the end of the meeting that we didn't land in the direction that we needed to go. And so 2 days later, I met with one of my board of directors. He was not in the meeting, but he had heard about it. And I just pulled him aside and I said, hey, that meeting, you know, I'm really upset with this person and that person. And they didn't get this done. They didn't get that done. And he pulled me aside and he was like, you know, what role did you play in that meeting? I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, did you not pay any attention to your words and your actions and how you were shutting them down and you weren't listening and they were trying to give you options and you weren't willing to discuss it? And it just kind of floored me a little bit. Yeah. And so I sat back and I first kind of argued it like, no, you know, they just weren't listening. He's like, no, you weren't listening to them. And so it was one of those moments where somebody just so blatantly called out my behavior that I had to really sit back and think, holy cow, he's right. So I went back to the people and I just said, hey, I've had time to reflect on this. I clearly didn't show up very well. I apologize. Can we meet again and talk through this again? And so it was a different outcome at the end of it. But his ability just to be that direct with me, just to say, like, you were the problem, not them. You showed up poorly. And it just kind of opened my eyes a little bit that, holy cow, my actions set the tone for that whole thing and set that whole thing on tilt.
That's pretty cool. It just shows so much about your relationship too. Sorry, Jeannie. But, you know, and that's just, that's exactly who we need sometimes. And that is, I makes me think like, okay, I need to add someone to my board of directors.
That's why
someone a little more direct.
I think it can get really easy to put people on your board of directors. That's going to be, you know, your biggest cheerleader, or, you know, your number one fan club member. And you should have one of those members on there, mainly because sometimes there are points where you need someone to fulfill your bucket, to encourage your heart, to give you that hug or to say, hey, keep going. You're doing the right things. But if you don't have someone or some people willing to call you out or willing to say, hey, I think you could have done that a little bit better, a little bit differently, you're never going to see your blind spots. You're never going to see the things that are keeping you from being successful and the ability to move forward. And you also may not fully understand what people are saying about you when you're not in the room. And those people should help you get to that point so you can hear, understand, and be able to react to that feedback appropriately.
One thing that I love about having a board of directors is this group could really be someone that could push you when you're ready to move on to the next step of your career. Statistics say that women do not apply for jobs unless they meet all the requirements. We've all kind of heard that statistic. I think fear of the unknown, fear of it being the right time in your life, and, you know, just all the things that we were talking about, the work-life balance, the fear of that might just be something that stops you from working towards the next step in your career. So do you have any advice for women who are just unsure, or how do they know if they're ready to pursue something further with Farm Credit?
So I love this question from a standpoint of opportunity is never perfect. It comes at you sometimes when you least expect it. And so a lot of times what I would say is, first off, take a look at what that opportunity is, particularly if somebody has come to you and said, I think you should consider this. It gets really easy, particularly as women, for us to dismiss and just say, nope, it's not the right time. Or I've got this going on at home, or I just took this new position. I don't think that I'm ready for that. But really sit down and listen to why they are asking you to think about that position. There's something they see in you that they know you will be successful in moving forward. So the first step is listen, right? Why do they think that you should do this, or vice versa? What is it about that position that you saw that speaks to you that you think would be interesting or open to it? Second, start to then think about all the people around you that you could surround yourself with to make you successful in that position. So read through the description. If you don't feel like you can chin the bar on all 10 out of 10 boxes, but you feel like you can chin the bar on 6, find 2 or 3 people who you know will help you chin the bar on the remaining 4 boxes. Or go to someone and say, you know, I'm struggling to see how I could be successful in these final 4 points, but what could I do for a plan? Or what is a way that I could get there eventually to be successful with this? Because I think a lot of times it's so consuming to think about being perfect right out of the gate versus starting to think about, no, I can bring something to the table now and then consistently work on those other finer points to be more of an expert later.
So one question I have, Ellen, when you are interviewing folks for a new position and maybe they don't check some of the boxes, but you're not aware of that at that point during the interview, do you prefer that the interviewer or the interviewees bring up the boxes they don't check and their plan? Or is it more that you'd rather just see them sell to their own strengths in those situations?
No, that's a really good question. I would prefer the honesty of them maybe owning up and saying that, you know, I don't have this experience in this, but here's how I would gain it, or here's how I would approach that or tackle that. Where I have seen, you know, interviews possibly go sideways or be derailed a little bit is when the person being interviewed won't acknowledge or at least think through how they would overcome that shortcoming, or how they would overcome, you know, maybe that weakness or that lack of experience. Sometimes I've seen people being interviewed almost be dismissive of that, you know, area that they have a weakness in or that shortcoming, versus just owning it and saying, you know what, I don't have a lot of experience in that. However, I have experience in this, and here's how I think it's applicable. And here's how I would then start to tackle that, or here's my plan for tackling that, or here's who I would go to help me with that. So long as you can critically think through it, that's a lot of the battle that we're looking for.
Well, when we talk about women ready for the next step in their career, the other thing that I've always heard is confidence. Well, I'm just not confident in that right now. You know, you hear that saying all the time. And Jeannie told us earlier about how we worked with Kelly Thompson and some different things. And one of the things that she says that I just love is confidence is a side effect of action, that you really do have to do things scared. And I try to tell this as a training, you know, standpoint, you know, we have all these CXs and they've learned so much in this last 7 months. And then if they didn't do things scared the first time, they would never build that confidence. You don't, if you wait for that confidence, it just, it never might not happen. And so I think confidence is a huge thing and just building that. But the other thing that I think is so great is when you said someone might approach you and say, you'd be perfect for this. And I think that is all part of building your brand too. And people around you, how important that is, so that people recognize that and say, I see something in you. So I don't know if you kind of want to talk a little bit about building your brand and what that means to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about building a brand, you know, the very, very first step of that is just even basic awareness and understanding. What is your base brand, or what is it that people are saying about you, or what is being said about you when you're not in the room? Half the battle is being vulnerable enough to even ask that question. It's being open enough to asking, not just your peer, your direct peers around you, but your leader of leaders, other leaders around you that you're interacting with, other folks, and just say exactly that, you know, how do you perceive my brand, or what is it that people are saying about me? But then being really open to what it is that those folks are willing or trying to tell you about your brand. And then once you get a baseline for that, truly understand where they're coming from, what perception or where are they getting that context of what it is your brand is. So kind of just for some, you know, base of where I'm coming from, you know, I have a brand of, you know, I'm fairly intelligent. I really understand, you know, what we do and how we do it really well. I'm really good at strategy and understanding strategy and seeing big, you know, complex problems and breaking them down fairly quickly and coming up with a plan. So that's the good part of my brand. Maybe the part of the brand that isn't as good is because I see, you know, that strategy and I see that solution so easily, I have a tendency to run straight to that solution and I don't bring others along with me. And I had one of my board of directors tell me one time, she said, Fallon, you know, because you move so quickly and you get immediately to the answer, you become so impatient with others around you when they don't get there as quickly. And that was so eye-opening to me because that part of my brain was really starting to drag me down because I was, you know, running towards a solution. I wasn't bringing others along with me. I wasn't helping them see the vision. I wasn't helping empowering them to get to that vision. And so when we think about leadership, those are all really key attributes of something that is needed in a really good leader. And so her giving me that feedback was so eye-opening because it was like, she was right. I was getting impatient. How I was showing up with that, you know, wasn't positive. So I had to start thinking about my approach. Now, does it change who I am from a brand perspective? No, but getting that feedback, understanding that feedback, you can start to change how you show up with that feedback, and you can start to change then the narrative of the brand, right? About not being impatient or running over people or whatever that looks like. So first, being vulnerable, start asking others, start asking your board of directors, your leaders, those people around you, you know, what is your brand? But then being willing to understand what are you willing to shift or adjust in terms of your approach to start to change what that brand or what that story is being told.
That sounds extremely difficult because that's your natural state, right? And I fully understand that because I am it's often not, accused of the same.
It's
and
not so I'll changing go in, who you are. It's changing right. your approach. And right. it's also probably one thing that I had to understand deeper was changing the audience. So I think, you know, because we can run to the solution or just drive towards a solution, we can be known as intimidating, right? Well, if you know that, it's changing your approach to where you yep. know that you've got the solution, but it's trying to bring others along with you. So you're not showing up as assertively or whatever that looks like. And so I had to think deep about that, Jeannie, because there's times where you're like, I can't change who I am. I'm not going to slow down, but it's more about changing how I bring others along with me.
I think we need a workshop on that one. led by you.
I would love that. Yeah. I think that's half the battle is just, it's not changing you who you are. It's probably deeper understanding of your audience and changing how you approach that audience.
Such a high level of being self-aware. You know, it's one thing to be self-aware, but to that degree is just like a whole nother high level of it.
I think that goes back to having others being willing to have those difficult conversations with you when you're not showing up well. And when you see that or get that feedback, I wouldn't say consistently, but when you hear about it, right, in the situations, then you become more self-aware yourself to know, oh, wait, this is probably triggering me in a way that's not positive. I need to step away from this, you know, and think about my approach differently. And so that's what's helped me over the years. Because again, it comes back to having those people being willing to help you be successful and just being vulnerable enough to ask them for that help.
Feedback's a gift, right?
So one thing, and maybe we kind of covered this, but you know, we've talked about building your brand. What about a legacy? So have you given this thought, Fallon? What's your legacy? What do you, if something were to happen tomorrow, what legacy has made the impact for you to deliver on that legacy? What do you want to be known for?
Yeah. So I really want to be known as being generous with my time and talent. I want to be known as empowering and uplifting and pouring into others, helping them be, you know, the best version of themselves. You know, you can have people in functional roles that are absolute aces at what they do. I don't want to be known as, yeah, she could really approve a credit really well, right? That's not what I want to be known for. I really want to be known as, you know, again, she was super generous with her time and talent, and she was more than willing to help others be the best version of themselves. And so when I think about that legacy, you know, that's really why we're here, is to help advance others and help them be their best version of themselves. And so I hope that's what people are also talking about me when I'm not in the room, I guess is probably the best way to say it.
Awesome. Yeah. Fallon, tell us a little bit about imposter syndrome. Is that something you've experienced, or your thoughts on that topic? I know that's something that I've experienced. I'm not sure that I'll ever quite work through it, get over it. And what is your perspective?
So somebody once told me that if you don't have imposter syndrome, particularly when you take on a new role, that you're never going to be challenged and you're never going to be the best version of yourself. Because imposter syndrome really is what's going to drive you to want to learn, to want to be the best version of yourself. And so in short answer, yes, I've absolutely had imposter syndrome. I've taken on some roles where I thought, yep, okay, there's clearly a reason why I have this role. And then week two in the job, it was, holy crap, how did they give me this job? I can't believe this. I'm in over my head. Like, what am I going to do? But you just figure it out. That's when you really start to ask those around you to be vulnerable and ask for that help. Because at the end of the day, if you're not willing to, you know, strive to be better, to learn, to try to improve, others will see that you clearly weren't cut out to be in that role to begin with. And so just being vulnerable in what you know and what you don't know is half the battle with that. But yes, Jeannie, we all have it. Definitely.
So I think you're the first person to put a full positive spin on experiencing and feeling imposter syndrome. So teammates, there you have it. It's definitely an okay thing. It means you're working toward your weaknesses and improving those.
Yes. Said it really well. Thank you.
Fallon, thank you so much for joining us today. Your expertise and insights have been incredibly valuable, and we're grateful for the time you've taken to share your knowledge with us. Your perspective, given your extensive experience, has truly enriched our conversation today. We appreciate your support, and we look forward to having you with us again in the future.
I appreciate it. Thank you so
much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a great conversation. So now on to a few upcoming events from Team Catalyst to watch for this fall. Fall circles will form soon, so make sure you check these out. They're being revamped with new structure and new topics. There's also another book club coming later this year. And lastly, Team Catalyst will be hosting a pilot workshop October 16th and 17th in Omaha. This two-day workshop will allow participants to work one-on-one with the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Career Center to update their resumes and improve cover letters. We'll also cover topics like building your brand, which we've talked a little bit about today, updating your LinkedIn page and other social media, professional etiquette and social settings, and even hold mock interviews. Watch for the top story as space is limited. This is one you definitely don't want to miss. Kelsey, Fallon, I appreciated our time together today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.